There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the deal we got? I mean, the deal we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, here we go. Midday Mobile on this Friday. Glad to have you along. And coming up, we'll get your text and calls. Also, later on in the hour, we'll play the rest of or some more of the Uvalde presser, the Q&A with the media there. And then later on in the hour, Mike Bunn from Blakely State Park joins us to talk about the state park. But that question that came up before it was time to vote on Tuesday, and we're talking about that Amendment 1, the State Parks Amendment, why Blakely State Park wasn't included with the funding of the others. We'll get into that discussion coming up in just a little bit. And I was hanging out with my man Angelo yesterday at Mobile Bay Coins and Fine Jewelry, and now I'm talking to him today. That's 2 days in a row. Hey, Angelo.
That's pretty unusual, isn't it, Sean?
It's good. It's good. And I do want to kind of talk about what's going on in the shop, some of the things I saw yesterday. But on top of that, people need to know your hours, because are you getting 3 days off in a row, Angelo?
I know. I feel guilty. You know what I mean?
You deserve it.
I mean, we did that for Easter. We went ahead and, well, actually, you know, took off Good Friday and then Saturday and Sunday for Easter. And I actually worked a half a day on Good Friday because I felt bad taking off. And Ron sort of insisted this time. He's like, no, you're closing down early Friday afternoon. You're taking off Saturday, Sunday, and Monday, period, end of story.
But there you go.
You know, he's...
We'll be Ron has spoken. Ron has spoken. So take your vacation. Enjoy it. I'm happy for you. But before then, or after Monday, yesterday, and I do want to talk precious metals in a second, but man, looking through the jewelry case too, y'all are loaded with great jewelry items, gift items.
We are. We've been slowly building up our inventory. We keep talking about the inventory on gold and silver and how we have a lot of it in stock right now, but we have also been slowly and steadily building up the jewelry side of things as well. So right now, we have probably the biggest and best selection of jewelry and precious metals that we have had ever. I was looking at our online store the other day. Our online store does not include all the gold and silver bullion we have in stock, but yet it has over 12,000 items in it right now.
It's awesome. Y'all got to check it out online and then go in and see it in person and go through that inventory. On the precious metal side, where are we? Where are we ending up on this Friday, gold and silver? What have they done?
Gold's around $1,850 an ounce. Silver is hovering just a smidge over $22. So to dip down into the you know, 20-ish range and below $1,800 on gold, and they've started creeping back up again. So I expect over the next few weeks you're going to see a slow climb upward on both metals. It's probably going to hit, you know, close to $2,000 on gold and then drop back down again. So right now, before it starts climbing up, pretty good time to get back into it if that's what you wanted to do.
All right. Well, give people directions to come do that and talk about the website. And let's talk about that radio show and podcast.
Yeah. So we're in Midtown Mobile, 2204 Government Street, online, mobilebaycoins.com. Click on that shopping button and sort of pre-shop before you come into the store. You can check us out on Facebook and on Instagram. And if you want to listen to the radio show, Two Guys and Some Change, that's on the greatest FM station here in town, greatest radio station here in town, 106.5, Tuesday night, 6 to 7 p.m. And if you miss it there, you can check us out as a podcast at twoguysandsomechange.com.
Hey, thanks, Angelo. Have a great weekend.
You as well, my friend.
All right, there he is, Angelo Semifero, checking in from Mobile Bay Coins and Fine Jewelry, and good for him getting a day off. And by the way, Monday, we have a day off here as well. Well, we'll kind of be in and out, but we won't be doing our shows because we're airing Fisher House, as we do for Memorial Day and Veterans Day. Fisher House is that charity that you have described over the years as essentially, okay, people understand Ronald McDonald House, understands how that works, right? Building these homes near places like Children's and Women's Hospital here in Mobile, but other children's hospitals around the country, they build these homes so families that have kids in treatment there can be close by and not in a hotel or a motel setting, but in a home setting with other people that understand what they're going through. Fisher House does the same thing for the families of our veterans that are getting treatment at VA facilities here stateside and around the world. They build these homes right by the VA facilities so that family can be there. They can, you know, have a home-like setting and then go be with that veteran or that service member that is in treatment at a VA facility. So they also impress me because they are great stewards of your money. Go do your own research and look at like Charity Navigator or any of the sites out there and see how many cents out of every dollar stay for the charity. Very little in administration. An efficient charity doing great work. And the story and the stories of those veterans and what they're going through on Monday here at FM Talk 106.5 on that Decoration Day, the day we remember those that, hey, gave all for our country, those that died in service of our country. Let that be part of your thought process on Monday. I mean, enjoy your time with family and all that and friends, but remember what Monday's all about, and Fisher House coming your way on Monday here at FM Talk 106.5. Listen, there are so many texts, I probably can't even broach these. I can pick a few of these out that have been coming in during the press conference. I will say this. Okay, so two of my friends that are in law enforcement have been texting here, and worried about what image this gives, and I'm kind of consolidating the two, but what image this gives law enforcement. Listen, I don't think any fair-minded person out there, you know, I mean, if somebody's, whatever they are, whatever their job is in this society, if one group, one place does something, it should not be reflective on the entirety of law enforcement. It sounds like, and we're about to get into the second part of this presser, that some big mistakes were made there in Uvalde. At least that's what the DPS chief is saying. That doesn't reflect on everybody in law enforcement, but I mean, it needs to be openly discussed going forward. And listen, I don't know how far along we are in knowing things. I think it will take days. It may take weeks. It may take longer till we know all the different stories here and the particulars. But the first of it coming out, and it has a lot of people asking questions about that. Do what? I'll tell you what. We'll go to that. We'll go to the second part of this presser, play some more of this, and then get some interaction with you afterwards. Let's go to cut two.
The question simply is this. There was a 40-minute gap. And if the 911 operators were aware that children were alive in that classroom, why weren't officers notified of that? And if that's the case, why didn't they take action? That's the question. And again, I'll go back to the answer for right now, is that it was considered, okay? The decision was made on the scene. I wasn't there, but at the same point in time, you know, a decision was made that this was a barricaded subject situation. There was time to retrieve the keys and wait for a tactical team with the equipment to go ahead and breach the door and take on the subject at that point. That was the decision. That was the thought process at that particular point in time. There was 19, like I said, there was 19 officers in there. In fact, there was plenty of officers to do whatever needed to be done, with one exception, is that the incident commander inside believed they needed more equipment and more officers to do a tactical breach at that point. That's why BORTAC was requested on the scene. As soon as they were there, they executed a search, or at least a dynamic entry, and went in. And, of course, that was not until 12. That was not until 12:57. Stand by. Right? I got it. Okay. Hey, from the benefit of hindsight, where I'm sitting now, of course it was not the right decision. It was the wrong decision. Period. There's no excuse for that. But again, I wasn't there. But I'm just telling you, from what we know, we believe there should have been an entry at that as soon as you can. Hey, when there's an active shooter, the rules change. It's no longer, okay, It's no longer a barricaded subject. We don't have time. You don't worry about outer perimeters. And by the way, Texas embraces active shooter training, active shooter certification, and that doctrine requires officers. We don't care what agency you're from. You don't have to have a leader on the scene. Every officer lines up, stacks up, goes and finds where those rounds are being fired at, and keeps shooting until the subject is dead, period.
Obviously, putting yourself on the border is very difficult to understand how the most powerful nation in the world, the citizens have access to so many high-end weapons, and this keeps happening over and over and over again, and now again with children. I don't need to Monday night quarterback with you guys to dress like the extra couple people, because I have a few questions, please. How can you keep this from happening again in the communities of Texas? And second, how did a 18-year-old kid that works at Wendy's be winning the minimum wage to buy a $5,000 weapon?
Well, answer the last. He used the debit card first. But to your point, it's very expensive, and a debit card is not a credit card. It means he had money in the bank. So why and how is being looked at right now. And I'll tell you this, thousands of more leads are being looked at right now because we haven't answered all the questions. We haven't gotten into the why. Okay? We know the individual was also into cyber gaming in that regard and group gaming in that regard. So we've got a lot of questions are out there. We're seeking answers, but we've got an obligation. We'll continue to update you when we find something out.
Hey, the woman in the yes.
The Border Patrol agents, the BORTAC agents that were in the building, did line up. They're part of the 19 that I talked about. And the entry team, ultimately the entry team that went in. But I can tell you that they were told, just as like as any other officer was told, and others, even command staff that came on board, is that the incident commander at the time believed that in fact it was a barricaded subject, that we had time, there was no kids at risk. I wish he was, because then there's no question. And I'll say this right now, and every time we have one of these and there's copycats, okay, and we need the public, just like we did back in 2018, that was a public, okay, that came forward, that we got two people that are about to shoot up a school or planned to shoot a school. It's imperative on the public. When you get something, just because it sounds like he's a nut, he may be a nut, but he just because it sounds like, well, impossible to do, he may be intended to do, as I read the timeline based upon the chats that he had. So, we need everyone, when we have a threat to life like that, to take it seriously and report it. Because ultimately, this is tragic. What do you tell the parents of 19 kids, or the families of two teachers? Yeah. Or the pay. Or what? Or, yes, sir. Yes, sir.
By 12:15, you had at least 15 officers and shields on scene.
Yeah.
Yet you did not reach the door until 12:50.
Hey, like I've said it before, is that, well, first of all, when it comes to an active shooter, is you don't have to wait on tactical gear. Plain and simple, you've got an obligation. What I know now, okay, absolutely, it was an active shooter, because you can transition. Keep in mind, in the doctrine, okay, of active shooters, you can transition from an alert, from an active shooter situation to a barricaded subject or a barricaded with hostage subject. But if shooting continues, and you have any reason to believe that there's individuals alive in there, you've got an obligation to move back to an active shooter posture, and that means everybody at the door. Well, Uvalde has a part-time SWAT team, number one. The ISD's got, they've limited officers. I think, what is it?
Well, you got six.
The independent, consolidated independent school district has six officers, and they didn't have one posted at that location. And someone said, hey, what do you tell the parents? I mean, you know, bottom line is that, or someone talked about and said, when there's kids in the room, why wasn't there an entry? Because it was believed, like I said at the time, that the subject was stationary, barricaded, there was no risk to other children. Again, on retrospect, from where I'm sitting right now, clearly there was kids in the room. Clearly, okay, they're at risk. And oh, by the way, even when you go back to shooting, there may be kids that are injured, okay? They may have been shot but injured, and it's important for life-saving purposes to immediately get there and render aid.
Where was the resource officer? Why was he not on campus?
He was not on campus.
Why?
Well, again, we'll have all those answers down the road, okay?
All right. And we're getting maybe the same gist later on in this. It's like the same questions just asked in a different way. The one about the resource officer, right, that was reported at first, there was a resource officer that it didn't engage. Then it turns out, there wasn't a resource officer on campus, off for some reason. You heard DPS chief there saying he didn't know why, but they weren't there. Then, of course, the question it was asked many different ways about not engaging the active shooter. You heard the pressure right there a couple different times. Chief strongly critical of local law enforcement not breaching, not going in, saying they did the wrong thing. The failure there. Under Texas law, he went on to say, or protocol or something to that effect, that you have to go in immediately in active shooter situations, which is what I've heard from folks in the know in law enforcement in this area. That is the protocol. You go in immediately. Just like one of the callers said yesterday, not only is it, that's the protocol, but think about it this way. Every second that dirtbag is engaged with law enforcement, shooting back and forth with them, is a second, is a minute that they're not shooting innocent people or children in this case. They moved the timeline some. The shooter was in the school by 11:33, not 11, whatever it was, before 40-something. Fired hundreds of rounds before officers arrived. Had a free will at that point. The fact that the 911 calls were coming from the school and the children whispering in the phones, heartbreaking here. And then, of course, one of these keys to this discussion has been this back door propped open. Now, do I know how that school looks and everywhere? Was there another way to enter? I don't know. But they said there was a school door propped open where the dirtbag made entry into the school. Still so many questions about this and we'll talk about this. But, I mean, once again, scene commander is there that showed up first. Remember, you heard this narrative, said, considered it a barricaded subject and there were no more children at risk. That is what Stephen McGraw said in that presser. What a failing that was. But I don't know that we know the full scope of this. There are side stories. People have asked me, do I know about the, did law enforcement go get their children first and not do anything? We had the story this morning during Mobile Mornings of a Border Patrol agent that was getting his hair cut and got a text from his wife, who's a teacher at the school. He has a child at the school, went there as the story says, with cover from other officers, went in, got his daughter, got all the kids out of that classroom. And as he's coming out, he's getting more teachers and children. I see him as a hero in this, at least the way it's being laid out now. He was there remember, if you were listening this morning, he was there in the barbershop. Right. And he Jacob Alvarado getting a haircut, gets the text about what's going on there, borrows a shotgun from his barber, which I love. I love that the barber has a shotgun and the barber went with him to go in there and get these children out. So there are so many of those stories that are going to be compiled on top of the larger news story. And we'll keep our eyes on them for sure here at FM Talk 106.5. Come back. We'll get some text here. Also, later on in the hour, Mike Bunn is going to join me. Blakely State Park, lots to talk about with him. But I got to figure out, like, what makes Blakely different than the other state parks? Why didn't it fall under the same funding model that was voted on Tuesday?
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, welcome back. And glad to have you along, Midday Mobile, on this Friday. We head over to the podcast page, too, because you just heard news update there from Devin. Yes, recreational red snapper season open. Pretty good discussion with Dr. Sean Powers and Scott Bannon, who's director of Marine Resources, yesterday on the show. That podcast is up. Plus, we'll have more of that discussion tomorrow morning at 7 on FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. That's the show Mike Ward and I host. You hear it the first run Saturday morning, then the replays tomorrow night at 11, also Sunday morning and Sunday evening. So hopefully you get a chance to check it out over the weekend. Say this, a lot of great texts and having a conversation back and forth with folks. You know, Florida Man says on here, it's just pure evil. Yes, that is a thing. And that's where I butt heads with a lot of people like, Sean, you're educated and you know this and that, and you just stick with this evil. I think there is pure evil. I do. There's circumstantial stuff where there's people who do bad things, but it's circumstantial. And then there's pure evil. I still believe that. And you can never protect always against it, but you sure as heck can mitigate it. And I'll say this, too, as the discussion's going on about the barricade situation and charging the school or not, an active shooter situation, this is why you hear from me, out of my mouth, such high admiration for the members of the military and law enforcement. It's what they do when we say they're there to keep us safe. Okay. Well, what does that really mean? Means they're there to take the violence for society. That's the job. That's why we hold the admiration. That's what they do. And 99.9% of them do that. Just this one situation in Texas should not cast a shadow on others. All right, be right back. More Midday Mobile News coming up next.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, welcome back. Midday Mobile, FM Talk 106.5 on start of a big weekend for a lot of folks. Traffic out there, well, it's trafficking. We'll get more updates with Kane coming up throughout the afternoon. This segment of the show brought to you by 1-800-GOT-JUNK, online at 1-800-GOT-JUNK.com. Hey, make the appointment. You're not going to probably get the 1-800-GOT-JUNK crew to come, you know, during your big holiday weekend. You got stuff going on. But what about next week? You've been looking at the junk. You're walking around it. Maybe you've just gotten used to it. People come to your house. Egad, look at that. Or it's junk outside the house. You want to get rid of you got a kid's swing sets in the backyard and your youngest child's in graduate school. Let it go. Or maybe a storage unit you need to clean out. A house you're getting ready to sell. Whatever. You got junk. You need it gone. You need my buddy Trey. He's been doing this for 14 years in Mobile and Baldwin County and doing fantastic work. 1-800-GOT-JUNK. You know the name is the number. Also the website, 1-800-GOT-JUNK.com. And when you do, like I've used 1-800-GOT-JUNK, and I think one time I called, the other times I use the online. But you go in, you find a day that works for you, they will reply back, and a window of time that works for you. They set a good old-fashioned appointment. They show up. You point at the stuff you want gone. They give you a price. If you say yes, they get to work and get it done right then. So do what I've done. Use 1-800-GOT-JUNK online at 1-800-GOT-JUNK.com, or the name is the number. Pick up the phone and call 1-800-GOT-JUNK. All right, let's bring on a guest. It's been too long, and you know I say that very seriously because I could talk to this guy every week. Our buddy Mike Bunn, director over at Blakely State Park, author extraordinaire, historian, bon vivant, man around town. Mike.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm good, man. How are you?
I'm great. I appreciate that introduction. That's a lot of titles there. I appreciate them all.
Now, you're stacked with the superlatives, man. Okay, so as a director there at Historic Blakely State Park, this conversation came up the other day, and yes, we were all talking about you, when we were talking about Amendment 1, the State Parks Bill, and we're in a discussion about the bonding and the funding and all this. Then it comes up. Somebody's like, well, I'm not going to vote for that because it doesn't fund Blakely. They said it that way. And I said, whoa, okay. So Historic Blakely State Park it's in your name, Mike. It's a state park. What's different?
We are a state agency of Alabama, and we happen to be a historic site that is also a park. But we are not administered at all by the Department of Natural Resources, which operates other state parks, such as Oak Mountain and Gulf State Park and all those. And that's what the amendment is really about. It's that department's effort to improve some invest some capital funds in their facilities. We are a standalone agency, just like the battleship, just like Tannehill, just like St. Stephen's. So we have to look for other means to improve our situation, and we're not part of that. We don't pose it, but we're just not part of that. We do not report to them. We report to the governor.
Okay, so but it's still a state park, but not under DCNR.
Yes.
Okay, so then if you report to the governor, the executive branch, how do you get funded? I mean, because that usually comes through the legislative side.
Exactly, and that's who we are working with right now. We've got some big goals. We want to get an interpretive center and a museum and education space here, and just have a new front door to the park. We've got some plans for that, and we're working with our legislative friends and others to help us find a way that we can make some things like that happen. But we are not part of the bond issue, which is, as we established, is that agency's effort to improve multiple facilities that it operates at once. We're a standalone facility, so we have to work for our improvements in other means.
Okay. Those other means are, I mean, is it multiple? Yeah, it sounded plural there. Other means.
Means, meaning that we know there must be a public component of what we're trying to do. You know, we are a state agency, so we're frankly discussing with the state. You know, we need some capital investment to upgrade what we're doing. We've got an incredible story to tell, an amazing facility, a loyal bunch of followers and visitors, and growing. And we need some help with that infrastructure. But we also know that we're going to have to approach some private funding sources to do all the things that we need to have done as well. So it's sort of a multi-pronged approach that we're in the beginnings of, and trying to figure out what we can make ourselves over the next few years, because we really think that the park has grown a lot the past few years. Give us a few more years and we really aim to really transform this place.
I'm such a big fan and a consumer of what y'all do at Blakely State Park. I'll be with you, and hopefully we can have some in-depth discussions about that going forward, Mike. But right now, in the short term, let's talk about what's going on at the park.
Well, appreciate that. Our programming is, of course, very full throughout the year. We're doing a lot of things, everything from writing workshops and art classes to a lot of cruises. And our cruise boat has never been more popular. We're doing everything from a fireworks cruise on Mobile Bay to some lower delta tours to upper delta tours leaving out of Live Oak, landing this summer. So there's a lot going on, and I'd encourage anybody who wants to take part in our boat, find the three or four different places we're running from all summer. All of that's going to be listed on the website. And all our tickets are booked through the website, events page of BlakelyPark.com. And I will mention that tonight we have some live music in the park. We've got a food truck coming in, the Good Guys food truck. Neil Dover, who's a popular regular down at the Floribama, he's going to play some music for us tonight. So we've got all range of activities taking place. Just check the events page of BlakelyPark.com.
I love it. And, you know, the people think about, I want to make sure there's the historic aspect there, and I want everybody to be there for the history. I mean, Lord knows, you know, I've dragged the Cub Scouts through the historic part of it as well. But there are people that come to Blakely that just enjoy it for being outside. You know, don't even really kind of tune into the historic aspect. And that's
no
good
doubt.
For that.
It's a wonderful little slice of preserved natural habitat and an area that's growing rapidly, and we've got over 25 miles of trails, hiking, biking, horseback riding, and just a wonderful place to get out and explore nature and just appreciate our natural environment here in the Mobile Tensaw Delta.
Okay, let's talk about also, because I'll talk about this and I figure, well, you know, everybody knows about this, and then they're like, what are you talking about? So the camping part of it, we've done a lot with y'all, but you get the RV and the tent camping and the group camping for loud Cub Scouts, but you also have cabins.
Yeah, and they're very popular. We've got two and one bedroom cabins, fully furnished, and I always joke they even have satellite TV to help you enjoy the great outdoors. And they're really nice cabins, and just really a nice amenity to the park, and have added a lot to what we do, and people really enjoy them, and we're having a lot of activity with our event center, which is turned into a pretty much a wedding facility. We host some beautiful facility for some weddings in the great outdoors. So in all aspects of what we do, nature, recreation, just pure relaxation, and of course, real significant local history. We've got a lot to offer, and we're really proud of that.
Yeah, I think, and before we run out of time here, too, the one of the many parts of this Renaissance man, Mike Bunn, historian and author. I think last time you were on, we were talking about the 14th Colony book. Put you on the spot. What are you working on now? You got something?
Yeah, I've got two different things. I got a book on the Tensaw River, and I've got a book on Annabella Mobile, and I've got some other things. But those are the next coming up right now. They've got a contract on, so I'm always working on something.
Good stuff. And remind folks once again, the website for all things Blakely, historic Blakely State Park, is what?
BlakeleyPark.com.
All right. And as we talk about the means of making sure Blakely State Park maintains and moves forward, let me know. I want to talk about those means with you on the radio.
Sure thing. Got a lot of things coming up we're going to be talking to you about.
All right. Good stuff. Mike, thanks for hopping on with us. You have a great weekend.
You too.
All right. That's Mike Bunn from Historic Blakely State Park. So there you go. There's a little explanation of what we discussed, about a week and something ago, with the reason it is different in funding from Amendment 1. So Amendment 1 passed, too, if we hadn't talked about that. It passed, and that's good. It's good news for the state park. Of course, I would much rather we have allocated the money. Instead of bonding it, we would have allocated it, but, you know, they didn't ask me. By the way, too, we will have other amendments coming up in November that will be on the general ballot, right? So the general, we do that in November. One of them will be, and it's strange because we've talked about Anaya's Law so much on this show over, has it been 2 years? Yeah, probably, with Representative Chip Brown. And people go, okay, why is it not law? Why are they not doing it? Well, the legislature passed Anaya's Law. The governor signed Anaya's Law, but until just our system, until the Constitution of Alabama is changed in this, it can't become law. So we will have a constitutional amendment, a CA, on the ballot during the general election. I'll tell you right now, that's a yes vote. That's a yes vote for Anaya's Law to put that in effect. So just remember that. And believe me, I'll remind you a lot more between now and then. Tiffany Ray from Taylor Martino joins me here in just a couple minutes on Midday Mobile.
Is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Glad to have you here and good to see Tiffany Ray with Taylor Martino Rowan back in studio. Thanks for being here.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Okay, so we're gonna do a little reverse here. If y'all didn't hear Tiffany last time, you are an attorney with Taylor Martino Rowan. You are also a recovering journalist?
That's a way to put it, yeah.
let's talk about it, because it's amazing when I get to talk to folks with Taylor Martino Rowan. It's like all attorneys, but then you'll have your super friends' powers, you know, that this person does this and this person. So you had a career in journalism.
I did. And it's given me a chance to contribute something right off the bat. I'm one of the newer members of the team. And so I can use my journalism skills, my background in researching a topic and writing a lot on deadline, and put that to work with our legal team.
All right. Because this is a key for people to understand that aren't on your side of it, that writing is a big deal. People will think about, okay, the courtroom and all that goes on. But let's talk about what happens in the case beforehand. A legal brief. I mean, what is that?
Well, first, probably a lot of people know most cases never go to trial in the first place.
That's not what they show us on TV.
Well, that's the exciting part.
Right.
My writing bit, I guess, happens behind the scenes, and it wouldn't be very exciting television. Once you bring your case to court and you make these legal claims, you really have to show that you have a viable claim and get through some hurdles before you have a chance to take your case in front of a jury. So, for example, once you bring your claim, the other side could file a motion. There's a few different types, and they will try to get rid of some of your claims or maybe the whole case and make some legal arguments. And then you have to respond to that. And that's the brief that you're writing. And so a lot of cases are really won and lost on paper that way. So it's important that you make your case strongly in those motions and to the court so you can get past those hurdles and take your case.
So if this is not written properly and this back and forth is not done in writing properly, you, like you said, you may never see your day in court. You may never see a jury.
Yes, that's possible.
So what, I mean, like from going through this, and I guess for a journalist, it's maybe easier than, you know, butchers, bakers and candlestick makers, but you're making an argument here or laying out facts, right? I mean, what are the facts?
The facts and the law. You know, each person that comes in the door, each client has their own unique story, their own unique circumstances, issues, and it's our job to know those and to apply them to the law and to figure out what viable legal claims there may be.
Because if I come in, Tiffany, and say, I was hurt by somebody doing this, this, that, or the other, then you've got to, then you're taking that and putting it in legalese, right? Or finding the law that says it's wrong that I was hurt.
Yes, yes. The law, the intention of the law, of course, is to give you those protections, to say these are your legal rights, these are the obligations of people, and when we have violated those create legal actions.
Okay, because so you are taking what we will speak of as just like, all I know is I was hurt and the truck did this or the whatever happened here, the product did this, and then you know that that equals, here's the best law to apply here.
Yes, that's our job to figure that out. You know, basically, here's the issue, here's the problem, what was done wrong? And then the question is, what's the law that says that that was wrong?
It's super important that the right law is applied, that you go to the right law and write that in that brief.
Sure, sure. It's a legal claim. It's a lawsuit.
Yeah, and but a lot of people will think they'll jump from this idea of that I've been hurt or I've been harmed, and then there's that court thing they see on TV. And this part of it that is so crucial, it's great to learn about.
Sure, there's a lot that happens in between, and it's not something that you see in the media, I guess. Yes, but a lot of it happens behind the scenes, the research and the writing, and that's where I get to come in, and I really enjoy that.
I've noticed in our conversations you really do enjoy it. I mean, you're in the right job. There's a right job for all of us out there, and you have found your place.
Yeah, I'm a nerd from way back, so it suits me. One of the partners in the firm, Steve Martino, he refers to me as a lawyer's lawyer.
Okay.
And I think what he means by that is I like to sort of be the person looking at the issues and digging into the weeds and maybe pointing out legal arguments or potential issues or
that is super important, because that's why we're going to get right. I mean, that's the argument to, hey, take this case. We have a right to come to court.
I suppose so.
Yeah. I mean, if it's done. And I want to talk about this as well, because this idea of the process, because for most people, you know, you see them after the worst day in their life, right? You know, this process of going through this, they come to Taylor Martino Rowan. They come, they meet, they say, in my language, regularly, like, this is what happened to me. And that starts this process. But then you're on board. Here are the attorneys at Taylor Martino. All of y'all are on board working on this. This thing about, I've read about this with the big firms that are out there. They'll have these caseworkers. They're like, well, you're not, you know, it's not the attorney, but we're going to assign you a caseworker. Is that, I mean, what does the caseworker do?
Well, to be honest, I can't speak to that. We don't have anybody like that in our firm. We have us, the attorneys. We have paralegals and legal assistants. We don't have anybody that fills that function. We do the
so you
work
have
ourselves.
Attorneys and paralegals working on these things, not caseworkers.
Sure, sure. Yes.
I want to go back through this process here of writing these out. As you write are you writing, because you said Steve Martino likes to say you're a lawyer's lawyer. So you're writing language that I guess makes sense to lawyers, but also, I mean, this ends up going in front of the judge too, right? So, I mean, you got to think about the judge looking at this.
Yes. You're writing for the judge at that point, because it's.
Do you know, I mean, you have an idea of what, I mean, you have to after you know what how they want to see it. You know, just think about being in school, right? To some level, this professor wants to see it this way and this way and this way. Does that kind of play into it? Like knowing how you need to line this up?
Well, I guess I'd say, you know, being a journalist, you always are writing for an audience.
Yes.
And you have to keep that in mind. Who are you writing for? How much background information do they have?
Mm-hmm.
So I think in general, it's always a good assumption to lay everything out as clearly as possible, because you want people, you don't want to make it hard for people,
right?
For anyone to know the argument that you're trying to make and to understand the issues and know the facts behind the issues.
Just joining us, talking to Tiffany Ray from Taylor Martino Rowan. What about this? Talk to people directly. You're writing for an audience. Now talk to an audience that they've had an injury, or somebody they love has had an injury, and they are reticent to do anything about it, right? They feel like, I don't feel like suing somebody. I don't feel like getting an attorney, but their lives are, you talk to these people and they're limited in their ability to make money, to provide for their children. I mean, what do you say to them? Just like you and I are sitting down talking. What do you tell those folks? Why should they come see an attorney?
Well, I would tell them that, first of all, the decision is always theirs. It's always in their power to determine what they want to do and not to do.
Right.
But it's always a good idea to have all the information in your hands before you make decisions.
Is that a thing where people could come in and talk to y'all at Taylor Martino Rowan and just say, hey, I just want to tell you what happened. I'm not saying I'm going to do anything. I just want to tell you what happened. And then y'all will listen to them?
Yes, absolutely.
So it's almost like, if somebody just wants to see, they have this injury, this thing happened to them, y'all are ready to listen to them.
Yes, we're ready to listen.
So, Tiffany, talk to me about people that have had something happen to them, some injury, something has happened to them from somebody else, and they just want to talk about this and see where they are. What do they do?
Well, they can just give us a call. We're online and we're easy to find. And, of course, there's no charge for calling and talking to us.
Well, because I hear people talking about, it's free. But so how does it actually work?
Well, it's free for the individual who comes to us with the problem.
Okay.
We tend to work typically on a contingency basis, which means that we recover only if you recover.
Okay.
And we will recover a percentage of that. So if you take a case to court and you don't recover anything, then there's
don't
no
owe you anything.
Cost. Yes.
All right. So let's talk about that. Let's get folks in to just tell you their story. Talk about what's happened. Once again, to get in touch with you, find you all online is best.
Mm-hmm. Just Google Taylor Martino Rowan and you will find us online.
Tiffany Wright, thank you for your time.
Thank you.
No representation is made that legal services performed are greater than the quality of legal services of others.